Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Bench Units podcast. I'm James McSorley, and this week I am not joined by Mark Schofield. I am joined by the third most common participant in these podcasts, I would say at this point. At this point, it's clear. Mendel up the north. How are you doing? I was really trying to think of a way to get your name wrong there. How are you?
Hello, I'm good. Happy to replace Mark. I will promise to not be as funny or controversial as Mark is, but my goal is to have a better internet connection today.
I mean, you can be funnier than him, like if you want. Please don't put me in the dirt in any way, like he likes to. But yeah, Mark couldn't be here. He's got some stuff that he needed to sort out that came up. That could be anything from like he's in jail to he's currently moving to Germany, as we often suggest in between Spanish and German games. But there will be no German games this week because Hanover Cologne was the only interesting one, and I didn't want to give you too much to do.
My pet theory is that he is coaching the Flintstones from the for the remainder of the seasons.
He's interviewing for the Canadian woman's job. No, he's not. It would be great if Mark just, I think his destiny, like, he's not involved in the sport of wheelchair basketball apart from this and loving it. Like, he doesn't play or coach anymore, but I feel like it's his destiny to coach a weird team at some point, like one of the
That'd be
teams
fun.
that Malik would end up at. I just feel like, wow,
Exactly.
Mark's in Lithuania. What? Like, Mark is coaching a Lithuanian club and also the Latvian national team. It's like there's a statistical probability if you're not sure who coaches a certain like mid-tier European national team that it's going to be like Malik or someone similar. But I'd love Mark to find that niche.
That'd be awesome. What
But
are we
yeah.
talking about today, James?
Pardon. So thanks, Mendel. Keep me on the track. It's really funny because Mark keeps me on the track, and I feel like it should be my job to keep you there, but absolutely isn't. We are going to talk about two Italian playoff games, the semifinal decider games, because we didn't want to talk about six games. Since we've spoken about doing this, the first leg of the actual finals has been played, but we'll leave that for Mark because I think he'd enjoy being in on that. So we're going to talk about a Giulianova Santostefano game three, a Cantù Sassari game two decider, and we're going to get into a bit of the more interesting, the probably the most interesting Spanish league game of the week, which was us losing to Murcia in overtime via four ejections, five free throws in a row at one point. But yeah,
We'll
before we
get to
get to
that.
that game later on, I have a great question. Do you know what those free throws were for yet?
No, and literally every day since that game, Rose has asked me if I've been able to figure it out why those five free throws were in a row. And I made a point of not asking you until we were on the podcast. So explain to me when we get there.
We'll get there. Spoiler alert, I have no idea.
Sure.
If you watch the video, there's one point where like someone's on the free throw line. I'm sitting beside Beatriz Sudaira just in the game, ice cold, dying for a pee, being like, "Hey, do you have any idea what's going on?" Because like when you whisper to someone in like school, being like, "Hey, what's happening?" But yeah, bit of ASMR there. But yeah, right. So we're going to Giulianova Santostefano first. Keep it on the rails, Mendel. Come on. So this game was a 64-49 to Santostefano off the back of six very close quarters between the game before, which Santostefano pulled out, and the first half of this game. And then what was that second half? That would have been 34-16, if I am not mistaken,
Yes.
which I am not. So I messaged you. We've been speaking about this, and there's been a lot of "Hey, shut up, keep it for the podcast." But this seemed to me like, do you know when you press a team, like you know when you pressed us in in Alcetti with a lineup that you don't normally press people with,
Yes.
and you hear the coach thing. The coach's thing is always like, "No, but we're not like pressing for steals or 8 seconds or whatever. We're pressing to sort of wear this team down, and it'll show up in the third and fourth quarter." Getting pressed by Santostefano sort of intermittently for two games in 2 days must suck because I don't know. We spoke about this, and what was your sort of read on why it sort of went wrong in the second half of that game for Giulianova? Because I have a pretty strong opinion on what I think happened, obviously.
Well, firstly, I wanted to note something about the way Giulianova broke the press. So they have a very structured press break in
It's a
which they have,
one inbounding. Hell yeah.
yes, they have the one pointer inbounding. They have usually Matteo Cavagnini and Mr. Benvenuto receive the ball. Like they're both on the elbows to receive the ball, kind of. And then I think usually it's not on the camera, but I think Jaylen Brown and Shea Barbieby are cross half court. Shea will usually then drop back to
Yes.
the defensive half, receive the ball, and make a quick pass to Jaylen, which I found interesting because usually, like we try to emphasize with Lando when we run press breaks to have two people over half and try to get the ball over with two people over half as well, so that like if anything happens, you at least have a two-man game that you can play.
Yeah, you can just get
Which,
into it straight away, right? Like there are
yeah.
teams, a couple of the club teams that did well last year had that thing in presses where they were just like, okay, get the ball over, and what are you going to do if we get to the 3-point line? Like, we're going to play two man. Are you going to not jump?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Giulianova obviously wasn't doing that. And I was wondering what you thought as well, what the advantages and disadvantages of like more or less sending an extra player to break the press, but then having one fewer over half to actually make plays. And like my first thought was it is more dependable the way Giulianova runs it because you have very short passes. The shorter passes, people are relatively open because they move into a space where they can very dependably get the ball, and then like and they do it very well, I think. Like Jaylen Brown gets the ball like comfortably on the offensive half all the time.
For sure. Yeah. I guess so, like two sides of the coin, or the two sort of ends of the scale on what you're looking for in a press break is like the very low end is we need to get the ball over in 7.9 seconds. Safely. We need to get a person over that we can throw the ball to, or we need to get the ball over there. The other end of it is teams who just go, get the ball in quick, we'll cross, we'll go, and we'll get an advantage out of the fact that we're being pressed. Like we'll get there like 5-on-4 or 4-on-3 or this, that, and the other. I like the sort of you go two guys over so that like say Barbieby gets over and he's planning on coming back, but Jaylen doesn't get there. I imagine Jaylen Brown can fill the hole and be that guy. Because a lot of press breaks, I'm also very invested in this because like I don't know if you know, I'm kind of invested in I currently play for a team that might be in the market for a press break or a couple of ideas. We have a couple of ideas, but that's the whole thing. Do you get one or two over? I generally like a guy filling that hole just pre-halfway line. But the idea of going and coming back, it sort of doubles your chances of getting someone over. And also, if you're pressing someone and they start coming deeper again, like they start going away from the basket, you're trying to stop them. Like, do you drop with him? Like, there's a lot of times where the guy who followed Barbieby over into the backcourt would just kind of sit flat because you're programmed to stay flat and not give up picking angles. And then I wondered, like, do you go super aggressive and try and steal that pass if you know where it's going? Or do you take off the inbounder and do you go, all right, you can throw the ball to a post and get it back to the one pointer inbound and Joel Boganelli. And go, right, we're actually going to like front this pass when he comes back. Like I thought about that as a weird thing to do. Now I'm thinking about how to like bust a press break rather than thinking about breaking a press. But I think you need, I like what they do because I think you get picking angles naturally out of guys coming back. And also you can't risk getting the, like just getting the ball over and not really having anything to do with it because part of the reason it works for them is like, Cavanini will post anyone up. Like if you get over with 2 seconds to go inside the 3-point line, he's like, yeah, all right, no problem. But yeah, I generally it seemed to work for them. And as a guy who played on a team that struggled to get out of the Santo Stefano press in a game last year, I quite like it. Do you think because they kind of go two up or three up a lot, do you think there are different press breaks that work better for different like do you think there's a world in which that doesn't quite work if a team goes five up or 4-1 or whatever. I think it works great if you have two people over the halfway line if a team goes 4-1, but you know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that's.
It's a good question, and it almost looked like Santo Stefano has like a couple phases in the press where like first they try to pressure everything, and then as soon as the ball gets over half, they're sagging in back and almost playing a normal zone. Like it almost like the moment Jaylen got the ball, like Cavanini and Benvenuto will just push to the zone and like push to the edge of the zone, and they will play a normal offense. And like they would be pushed out some chair lengths if Santostefano could manage that. But it didn't look like they had any trouble with the fact that it was just Jaylen Brown across half court, because the rest would usually just follow naturally.
Yeah. They're very like it's I don't know, like if you're an Italian team, you're used to getting pressed when you go to Europe. And if you're an Italian national team guy, you're used to getting pressed because you're used to playing 3-4s and 2-1s or whatever. So like it's interesting, like obviously as I kind of alluded to, like there have been conversations at the club I'm at about press breaking, and it's fun to like you have like an Italian guy and you've got like me coming from the GB background, and you've got Pat, who's obviously come up in like US college systems and Team Canada. And it's funny the like just the different opinions on how to break a press. And it's like if you do any of them right, you're probably fine. Like if you, no matter where you set up, if you set two good picks, you're probably in business. But like it's just, do you want the sort of, do you want a higher floor on the outcomes, or do you want a higher ceiling? Like, do you want to go like, oh, it's a bit risky, but we'll get a layup out of this? Or do you want like, yeah, we'll get the ball over? It's like I don't know. I very much like get the ball over. If you can get into something like a 2-on-2, I'm a big fan of it. Cool. But like, yeah, I don't know. Like, it depends on who you've got and the talent you've got. Like, I've seen, like, if you're going like, hey, we're going to get over with like Lee and Filipski, like, all right, cool. Yeah, do that for sure. If you want to play, if you want to try and defend Lee and Filipski 2-on-2 with a full court, like, no problem. But I guess it's, but yeah. Have you seen any other team inbound with a female one or a one pointer? I've seen, I think some Turkish teams have done it, but like, Giulianova.
Well, Galatasaray certainly tried very hard when they already inbounded the ball.
Yeah, they were like, oh wait, no, sorry, do you want me to? Cool, I'll just go back that way. God, that
I
was
feel like
so
I've seen it. I
annoying.
don't really remember what would have been. We did it with the national team. We've done it with the national team, the Dutch national team, for little stints.
With Frank or Anton back in the
No, definitely just with Frank. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And I think there's something to it. And like it was funny because Santostefano would just let Joel Boganelli do whatever he wanted to do after that. And I think that's part of why there's not like a three up to keep those like Cavagnini, Benvenuto, and Boganelli up in their own half. They would just like get a pick and start rolling. So I would, if Bilbao would be asking for my counsel, it'd be like, yeah, copy the Giulianova game plan, and seems to work okay, I think, against Santostefano. Just try to don't have to do it 8 quarters in a row in 2 days.
Yeah, I think that is the thing. Like, we spoke about this and we were like, is it like they subbed in the third quarter and they brought someone whose name I forget on for Cavagnini in the.
Greco Brachus is his name, which is epic.
Yeah, that's great. Respect it. We should have like a good names in wheelchair basketball Hall of Fame. Like I do that with the NBA, where I'll be like, Anna, rate this certain, rate this guy's name out of 10, Quincy Poindexter. Yeah, an 11. But no, so like subs obviously make a difference in this, that, and the other. But like, if I spoke Italian, I'd be able to tell you how many turnovers that they had. But I feel like there was just a run in the third quarter where they were just throwing the ball away and giving up layups. And I think to me, that was like the breaking point where you could see Santostefano like ran a couple of layups off steals in, and they were like flexing and booming. And yeah, I knew we'd grind them down eventually. We're pressing a team with a one on the floor and a 45-year-old. And we were like, hey, this'll work at some point. And that felt very much like proof of concept. Yeah, normally they break teams down a little bit earlier than that. I was gonna say on the other side of the ball, why, like, I don't. Santostefano are a weird one to me because they seem to get a lot of good stuff out of pick and rolls without people really jumping Bezzetti or Giaretti that hard. And the only reason I can think it is because they're both so quick that if you half jump them, like they kind of beat people rather than get picked half the time. But it's nuts to watch them be like half a gap here, cool. Like the way like Sofiane's great at it, because he's super quick. Asier is really good at it in a different way. When he doesn't get jumped, where he'll just like move his chair in certain ways to like bait you into that stuff. But they're both so great at sort of milking half an advantage because they're so quick. Do you have any like do you have any wisdom on why you think they might get it? Also, they scored 64 points. It's not like they scored 95, but you know, within reason.
Yeah, I think you're onto something, and I think they're pretty aware of this, of what their strengths are as well. And then I think because of that, one thing they run that works pretty well for them is like a weird double cross, like two
Oh, yeah.
people screening from the left side of the court going to the right, ball starting on the right wing, and like Bezzetti and Dimitri would like pick for Jarrett or something, and like they would get just something by Bezzetti getting like a half push on somebody and people not being aware of where the pick is coming from. And yeah, they manufacture, they create a, they produce a lot by just working very hard, and
That's
they
it.
do it
Like
quite well.
it's you can pick a lock or you can kick a door down when you're playing someone who's like defending you well. It's like sometimes you just gotta kick the door down. I'm not like that sounds like I'm discrediting skill. Like they're both highly skilled and like moving your chair that well and that hard that accurately is very hard to do. As someone who can't do any of that stuff, that is it's nuts. I also just love when Benzetti goes to the basket and he's got the ball like cupped between his hand and his forearm. And he's just like, I'm gonna like he sits so far back when he's like shooting some of his layups. Like he's so great at keeping it away from people when he goes to the hoop. I love
And
it.
then I feel like every season he adds something else to his layup package. Like I feel like a year ago he had like a lot of weird underhanded scoops through the middle that like he would draw a lot of fouls from. And then now today I saw him like on the game that I watched today, he had two beautiful lefties just in
Yeah,
the
man.
key, putting it up lefty, swishing it.
Yeah, it's like a undersized guy finishing 101. Like it's you go up under, but he also like throws his chair a little bit and gets some whistles, which is great. Another thing, just while we're blowing smoke here, I love watching Fabio Raimondi come off a pick. Everyone in the world knows that he's sending it inside and not shooting it once he dribbles off a pick, and it's just like there is a basketball-shaped hole that will appear at some point before I go out of bounds on the baseline. And you bet your ass I'm finding it. Like it's so like just a little like comes off the pick so tight. At no point can he like pull it up. Like at no point is he gonna bounce stop and pull it. Like you know he's shoveling it because he's like sits so low and like he's still really quick. His hands move quick and but I just love the like inventive. It's like when you like kids get little toys and like there's little square shaped block and square. There's like an exactly molten size seven shaped hole for a ball to go through into an undersized forward to finish a tough layup, and they just get so much out of it. It's so cool to watch
It is
as
very
someone
cool.
who's like as somebody who's just like, yeah, I'm a little small. Could I like, but no one like I don't get to create. I don't get jumped in the first place, but. And I can't do half of that stuff, but it's so cool to be like, how does he get around the physical limitations of sitting so small and being 49, I think? I don't know.
Oh yeah, something like that.
It's so
Apparently,
creative.
he's been selected to the national team again.
Hell yeah. Well, like, it's not like, what other twos are going? You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
no, he's the one.
Going to be the, like, I wondered, wasn't there an Italian national team a couple of years ago that was like 6'4"s? 615s, like that's an exaggeration, but
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think the first year that it didn't take Stupinengo, they had like 3 fives and fours, and then ones and 1 fives.
I love it so much.
No.
Or like the Australian national team that was only round numbers. They're like, what are we doing at
Yeah.
that point? Like, hey, if we picked one of you, we'd need to pick two of you. Oh, that was real funny. But right, do you have any other little bits that stuck out to you in this game?
I do. We also haven't run through the stats yet, if you want to do that still. I don't know if you find that important in your new format.
Is there a new form? The new format is you're dying for us to get into the weeds of X and X's and O's. So you immediately got me started on it, because I'd shy away from it if not. All right. So San Stefano, I will read out their stats as the team that won. Gioretti had 26 on an efficient 10 from 18, including 2 from 3 threes, which kind of slipped my mind. Bezzetti with 20. I think if you're coming up against those guys, you've got to really try and limit one of the two of them. I say if
Yeah.
hypothetically, when we do, Fabio Raimondi 14 on 6 from 9. Dimitri with a 1 from 8 for 2 points. And Matteo Veloce with 2 points on 1 for 3. On the bench, we have Di Miranda, 0 from 3, and Busso with 0 from 1. Cool. Do you want to go through the other half? Have I left you the worst name? No, there's no hard names to pronounce here.
No, I got it. We got top scoring on Giulianova's side by Benvenuto, which Mark was being kind of critical of earlier this week when we were texting about him. But I actually thought he was playing really well, and I think he's very important for Giulianova. And I say, way to go! He had 17, 7 from 15 shooting. Then there was Shea Barbibai with 6 from 12, 6 points for Jaylen Brown, 3 for 10. That felt like it was more to me, but I believe it's stats. And Matteo Cominini with also 6 points, 2 from 7.
He took
And Duovo
seven
gonna,
shots is the thing. Like, I think
yeah.
that like they're normally double figures for him, and I wonder if that's a fatigue thing at this point.
Maybe. Then from Jaylen Brown's 6 points, there was one cool thing that I wanted to mention. There was a little 5-point play in the fourth quarter where they were like down 14 or 16 and they were still trying to go at it. And Jaylen hit an end one and then just smashed his free throw off the backboard and the rim and got it back into his hands. They ran like a weird offense and Shea hit a three.
Oh
So
yeah, forgot about that.
it
This
was
was
kind
the
of
first
cool.
game I watched of the three that we're going to talk about. So it's all soup at this point. Yeah, no, that was cool. I always love seeing that executed well because I don't know if you've ever been in the situation that you have to miss a free throw and try and get it back to you. But like, I'm terrified of making it, which is not normally a risk I run. But like, I'm terrified of like airballing. Or I don't know if you've ever seen. It's 2017 Euros, the year that Turkey beat GB. George Bates was in the game when we were like, I wasn't there, like I wasn't part of the squad at the time. George Bates was on the free throw line down the stretch when we were needing to make it up. And I think George just threw the ball off the backboard instead of the rim.
Oh,
Just
beautiful.
like a young guy's mistake, I guess.
If only it would be that easy.
But yeah, that's really funny to me. I think one of the Turkish guys was like, "Hey man, just gonna hit the rim," in his telling of this story. But yeah, shout out to George Bates; he's the man. I saw him at Champions Cup, and you probably did too. But yeah, it's been a long time. Ba, 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 ba. All right, cool. Should we move on?
Excellent.
Yes. So as a bit of a spoiler to once again what I think kind of turned this game. I said to you a couple of hours ago, hey, who had Italian playoff semi-finals both kind of decided by pressing on their bingo card? Which was very strange, but it's one of those games that you kind of feel slightly vindicated when you're watching first quarter. And like I was watching Sassari just go inside constantly. And I was like, I know Steve's not there, but do they have a press lineup? Like, can they? Which they went to in some form and won 65-54. That was just my way to loop back around to reading the score out before we get started. So, why do you think, like Sassari had 21 in the first quarter? Like, why do you think they got inside so easily? Or do you think it was going inside? Like,
Well, they play two really big bigs in Bellers and Saliu Dien in the starters, which, and on top of that, both Asecha and Lindblom were just shooting well. And so I think that's the start. And then Bellers is pretty relentless as a force that just wants to go inside. Like he is of the Lee Manning school of just give me this little gap and I'm gonna throw a little fake in and push through it. And if you're only a little bit too late, I'm gonna be right under the basket. And yeah, that can be hard to stop if you're not ready for it. And then on the other side, there's just not a lot of length on Cantu's team. So
it's a team that plays four bigs and no massive guys. Like,
yeah.
there's a little like they play four big and a female one, and you could argue that they're playing five guards, like in terms of like skill set.
Yeah, I would say
I'm
so.
not sure that's maybe like Caratini is a sort of like operates around the elbow and whatever and goes inside. And obviously they have two guys on the screens, but like half the time in some of their lineups when Steve's there, Steve didn't play this game. Steve Sarri did not play this game. Just I think he's injured or something, they were saying. I don't speak Italian,
Yeah, I believe so.
but hope he's all right, obviously. But yeah, I wonder if Sassari saw this without Steve and were like, all right, this is our chance. But I kind of felt like the Cantu rotations were like, there was like, I don't think you should be Cantu and jumping a shooter and them scoring just off the first pick and roll and like not tripling once. Like if you move the ball around and you have to rotate two or three times and teams are a little slow, but I don't think you can go ball to one side of the floor, jump, pick, inside, layup. Or there were times where there was a pick and roll, I think started the second quarter, where I don't remember who ran it, but it was like pick, ball goes inside, there's a layup, and also Bellers has broken them down 2-on-2 on the weak side at the same time with Spanu, I think. And it was like this, just a lot of weird breakdowns. And I wonder if I wonder if that happens with a guy like Steve on the floor. I don't just mean like chair skills wise, but I mean like organization and like pedigree
Oh,
of
yeah.
coming from the US and kind of keeping things sort of organized. I don't know. Maybe that's like those guys, obviously, I'll give them the credit of saying that they should be able, like they should be better than that anyway. But there was a load of weird breakdowns that I felt like, and as you say, those guys shot well, but I don't think it should have been that easy to get inside on a team that is still pretty big and pretty mobile. But yes. So I was watching this and being like, hey, why, like, could they press? Like, could they try something? Because at least you can kind of, if you're pressing, like, obviously you're opening things up a bit more and you're maybe a bit more vulnerable, but at least you can kind of pick your poison a bit. Like, if you're pressing and it's broken down, but you have someone on Beller's foot plate, you can decide to stay there and figure out. You can kind of sometimes make choices like that, and also just take them out of their rhythm, because it was a very clear, like, ball goes down the left hand side, pick and roll, someone in the middle, seal side for Beller's on the right. And like if you end up, you know, yourself, you come out of a press every so often and you're like, oh God, I'm over here, but I meant to be over there, and I'm on the perimeter, shooter on the block for me, and this is all a bit messed up. And sometimes you get that out of it. And I kind of wondered when that would happen. And then yeah, I understand that. What's the young mid pointer that was kind of playing in that spot by the end?
Swells.
Bulls, yeah, Alessandro. So yeah, like he's not like their Steve Sarriero lineup with their 3-3-5s, a 2-5, and the 3-3-5s, Maxi and Santarelli. I understand that's not like not playing Steve in that is like suboptimal, obviously, because Sarriero, one of the best players of all time. But the idea of it still works a bit. Like you're still mobile, sort of ish, top to bottom, and this guy's pretty quick, obviously. And also, you can press while keeping a bit of height on the floor. So if you do break down into the half court and you have to match up with Bellers or whatever, but I think that was once again, like maybe I'm just press on the brain because I'm just thinking about our own stuff. But maybe I'm bringing work home here. But I felt like that was kind of the turning point, because Santo Stefano, is it still the two Italians rule, or is that a thing? One Italian rule, or
I think one Italian rule right now.
I thought it was a one, I thought it was a two Italian rule, and then I was like, do Argentinians all just have Italian passports, or is it one Italian? Because I feel like there are maybe some lineups that I was wondering if Santo Stefano could have gone to but didn't, with a load of mids. But maybe not, maybe points wise, maybe not. Maybe that was the issue. I thought it was an Italians issue, but
Having played there last year, my feeling says 1 point. Well, one Italian,
yeah,
but.
it used to be two, so maybe they've reduced it, because I don't think it being two really helped them that much. But we're not here to debate that, I guess. But yeah, like I'm just like, ah, just put a press on, you'll figure it out. But that's kind of what I think happened in both games. Like you're kind of taking away the. Because like Spanu's not the most mobile guy, obviously, and he pretty much has to play 40. I thought, going back to the fact that Sassari did really well getting inside, like I thought Esteche had a couple of cool finishes inside, like where he'd move the ball, he'd get jumped, move the ball of pick and roll, the pick would be held, he'd cut baseline, catch it again, spin and finish, because he's not a small guy, obviously, neither is Lindblom. So You kind of mentioned the fact that them two on the floor really helps. The fact that they were shooting the ball well, apparently. But I say apparently, the statue was 7 from 9 for God's sake, which is nuts. He didn't miss a two. I don't know if that's did that. I feel like I saw him miss one. Maybe there was a foul, but
I don't know.
still crazy. But absolutely nuts. Have you seen what has happened in the finals so far?
No, I have not.
Cool.
You?
Neither have
You
I. What's your call?
have.
What's your call? One of these games has literally already happened, and I think the other one might be on right now.
We put ourselves out there unnecessarily, but no, I'm pretty confident Santo Stefano will take this. I think they have
Oh.
like this, like the size and physicality that is going to be hard to match for Cantu. I think unless they really struggle from outside, Santo Stefano, that is, I think they'll take it. But you're throwing me under the bus potentially here by everybody knowing the result and me not knowing the result, but I'll take it.
That's fine. I don't know it either. I would have called Cantu to win a game that goes to like 50. Like I would have got, I got like Cantu in like a 50 something, 50, like a 56, 52 or something. It'd be nuts if that was actually what happened. But I don't want to slow our internet down by. I don't want to lag this podcast by looking it up. But yeah, do we have stats to go through for this game? All right. I'll let you go first. Pick a team, any team, and I'll read the other stats.
I like your rule. We start with Cantu since they've won. We have top scoring Berdun with 21 points, 7 from 15. One little cool thing is that he had two really cool one-handed finishes, both like at the end of the shot clock, one going right, the other, well, no, both going right, one in the first half, one in the second half, and just like putting it up one-handedly straight from the dribble and going in. I was like, well, there must be something with the Argentines being able to just not use the other hand because it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's been doing his Kyrie Irving homework.
Well, they were definitely his dominant head, but
Yeah.
that's
That is the
and then
most nuts finish I've ever seen in my life,
oh
but
yeah.
we'll not talk about it because this is not an NBA podcast.
No, but yeah, agreed, I've seen it and it was nuts. Second top scoring, seventh top scorer on Kantu is Karasino with 13 points, with pretty inefficient shooting, 4 for 19 from the field, 21%, but then shooting 5 from 7 from the free throw line, helping him get to 13 and making it efficient in the end. Simone Dimaggi will score 38 points in a game last week, but just 10
Peace.
in this one, 4 from 6 in just 11 minutes actually. So he didn't play a whole lot. We have Spoelstra, the young kid coming in, 6 points. And Maxi Ruggeri coming in with 9 with a
Yeah.
beautiful off the dribble beating Spanu. That
Yeah.
was a nice little shake and bake.
Yeah, I thought Ruggeri kind of brought a bit of control to the whole thing as well. Like he came on the floor before the sort of press was that apparent, and there was just a little bit of like. And it's like, I don't know, in the years that he and Steve weren't there before this year, they've been able to, like, Berdun can run teams. Obviously, there's a load of guys there that have had the ball in their hands. But, like, I don't know if you have a full season of Steve kind of running things, having a guy like Ruggeri come in and be like, all right, let's relax a little minute here. Let's get the ball to the right places. And him shooting well really made a difference. Also, I have the stats for the first game yesterday, and that was. Cantu 72, Santo Stefano 68. What an absolute barnstormer! Like just lighten it
We were
up.
both wrong, James.
We were both wrong. I had Cantu winning at least by a couple, but I was wrong in the style of it. But yeah, I'm gonna move on. Bellers top scored for Sassari with 17. It's also really funny that their name isn't written. Like Sassari isn't written in their name on the stats at any point, but I'm like, that's Sassari, isn't it?
Neither. Oh, yeah. Okay. Never mind. Yeah.
I
Go
do
on.
have a Bango de Sardegna, Sassari. Bellows with 17, 8 from 13. Then we had who's up next? Lindblom with 16. Estetia with 15 on 77% shooting, which is once again nuts. And then ones and twos from What did you say that guy was? His name was Dien, is it? Salut Dien.
Yeah, well, we Saliu is what we call him, is his first
Cool.
name.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I just the pronunciation of Dien. I wasn't sure if it was like an Italian DNA or
I think it's French.
cool. Salut Dien with one Charlie McIntyre off the bench with two on 1 from 6 shooting, and Enrico Rione with 1 point. So you're talking about Garzano bumping his stats up a little bit by the free throw line. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen a wheelchair basketball game where it's like the Harden numbers where someone's 1 from 11 for 23 points because they've gone to the line a whole heap. I don't think this game is full of on ball grifters going to the free throw line. There's a lot of off ball grifters going to the free throw line, but
I want to
I'm
say I've
speaking to one
seen.
of them, but
I want to say I've seen Alejos do it, where he was like, made 14 free throws or something, and scored most of the points from the line.
yeah,
But
that rings a bell, but like everything does it. I've seen every type of game, but I've seen like
yeah.
every statistical anomaly is just like filed away somewhere in my brain that I can't get to. But yeah, no, that's probable. Like there's games where I think it's also harder to just put your head down and beat someone off the dribble and get to the free throw line the way able-bodied guys do. Like I don't think that's a part of our game apart from a handful of guys, but. But anyway, should we move on to the stuff I don't want to talk about?
Oh yeah, I have a lot of stuff to say here, James. Let's move on.
Oh man. All right. So, let's get into it. Let's get into the weird place. Bilbao 75, Murcia 81 after a 15-9 overtime. Man.
So I want to start with what was to set the stage, what was on the line with this game?
On the line for this game, I believe, was third place in the Final Four, if everything plays out roughly like we would hope it would, because we played them in their place and lost 84-83. So we either needed to win by two or win by one or whatever, and the game not go to 80 something. Like if we won by one, but it was in the 60s, that would have done us 4 point balance, probably. Allegedly,
Okay.
because obviously, like if you beat them by one, they can't score more than in the 60s, because that's not how winning and losing works. Generally, but yeah. So yeah, we are game out first quarter 22-20, and it leads to my first question to you. It's definitely something we've spoken about before. Like, at what point, how early in the game can someone get going more than you'd planned for, and you change what you're doing? Because I
You're
was,
talking about Robles.
yeah, and like he killed us in their place as well. He's a good basketball player, good shooter. But like you gotta give something up at all times. And I just like philosophically, at what point do you go, like how long do you sort of hold on for dear life and hope it doesn't take them home? Because
My answer to that.
I would argue not to the extent that we did, but that's hindsight. Like,
Okay. Yeah, I'm inclined to say it depends, and it depends on what it looks
does, you're
like.
right.
And to me, Robles really looked like he was super confident. His stroke looked on fire. He didn't touch the rim, I feel like, on his first four shots, and it was just like, I don't know, maybe he gotta do something about this.
That looked easy. Yeah, like I wonder, it's that thing of like, are our like L's or our yo-yos, whatever you call them, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on, like is it's like do they need to be better or do we just need to go or what's the
Yeah.
deal? But yeah, he buried us a couple of times. He buried us from the 3-point line in their place, if anyone remembers that game. As I say,
Wrong.
once again, good basketball player before the likes of Pete Guzak and stuff showed up, who I must say wasn't there this game. So even more, we probably should have been able to pull that out. But yeah, like he lit us up in their place and he's been starting for them for a couple of years and he's been one of those guys that's kind of been on board while they've been on the way up. But so it's like apart from it killing me, like it's good to see a guy like that doing well and playing well, I think. But yeah, he looked real comfy.
Yeah.
As you say, like it's not like he's hitting mad ones that we're like, nah, that'll tail off. Like practice shots at a certain
Yeah,
point.
and then also like it wasn't like whenever he would make a shot, he would be like go out of his way to be like, yes, look what I did. He was like, no, yeah, I got this. I'll do it another time. Like, no problem.
So you think that's a real telltale sign? Like the attitude of someone who makes shots can tell you about how hard you need to defend someone.
I don't know. It's part of it.
And I always love when like you know someone's a shooter and other people don't, and they there's just this moment of like, oh God, yeah. Like I when you see someone who doesn't know that like Nico Schwanzer is a good shooter or whatever, to pick an example, they're like that guy, he strokes one. It's like even if it doesn't go in, you're like, oh yeah, we gotta jump this guy. Like he shot that with 22 seconds left on the shot clock, and no one batted an eyelid. Like, we're gonna press this guy full court.
So I have a couple of questions for this game, and like feel free to at any point to be like, no, this is classified information. This is not for on the pod. But one thing that I thought was interesting at the start of this game was like I noticed a difference between how you guys played Murcia and for example how you guys played against us in Champions Cup, where I felt like Asier was running more of like a one guard kind of running the main offense, sitting behind the screen on the left side as he likes to do with probably Chema in front of him. I think Chema started.
Yeah, Chema was there.
And Pat being more of a two guard, trying to play off of whatever Asier would create or playing the weak side together with Mariana. And I thought at the very start, I thought it was quite interesting because, of course, both Asier and Pat are very, very qualified to run whatever you need to them to run on the offensive end.
Game problems.
But I think probably Pat's game is more adaptable than Asier's game. So like Asier's, if you want to optimize both their skill sets, having Asier doing his thing on the pick and roll side with a big in front of him, I would say is Asier's strength. He can do other stuff, of course. And then I think Pat is more dynamic, more able to take advantage of things that are created on the weak side, maybe like follow a seal, get inside, play bigger. So I thought to start off of the game, like off the to start off, I thought that was interesting to see how. Because against us, Pat was the main ball handler, I felt like, which is maybe if it had to do with the press, or I'm not sure. But I thought it was cool to see, like, okay, yeah, Asier with the ball in his hands is maybe not a bad move. And it worked at the start.
Yeah, I think we had 22 in a quarter, right? Like it's funny, there's kind of a thing where you lose a game like this and you feel like it's the end of the world and nothing's working, and you're like talking about a game as if you scored 30 points. It's like that's not the case. But I guess there's a thing of if we take the ball out of Pat's hands or whatever, and it's at what point do you like need to try and get more people involved or him involved more? What point do you move the pieces around versus like let it come to him? And I don't know the answer to that. Like that's the sort of question I'm trying to answer in my mind. But like like as you say, both super qualified to do all of that stuff. And I think part of it's just like they're a super mobile team that even when they weren't pressing could give us problems in terms of mobility. And I think that's part of the sort of if you kind of draw a line between all the teams that have given us trouble all year, the mobility stuff comes up kind of through and through. But I think that stuff can work, and I just wonder like can we like to me to you like can we mix it up to make it a little bit more like, oh, it's this guy behind the screen now, oh no, our plan for this guy was this, or oh God. Like I think you can get a lot of stuff, and I don't mean us and I don't mean against Mercia, I mean teams can get a lot out of just like you can force defenses to make mistakes rather than you doing anything great. Like if you just run something a little different every so often and they go, oh God, yeah, I'm over on this side of the floor because I expected you to be over here or whatever. Like you've played in the Spanish league, it's a lot of you two play on this side and you two play over here and you play in the middle because you're the this guy. And if you just come out and like exchange, all of a sudden teams are like, what? Like we put up our one pointer in the corner because we wanted to protect her, and now your strong side offense is over there. Like stuff like that, where I'm like, I wonder, can more sort of not even adaptable, like just can we be slightly less predictable is a question. Just teams, I just like teams that mix it up. Maybe it's like because I've kind of grown up playing for a national team that's just had a load of really skilled mobile guys that sort of we've all been taught that from Day one, we, I mean, all the quick mobile skilled guards and also me is what I mean by we. But like you kind of
Yeah.
come up exchanging and like other teams don't do that. Like you guys do a whole lot of that stuff. Like you guys will, you've got your set stuff, but then there's a lot of like, oh no, like this is the read. If you come over this way, you'll have this. If you exchange with a guard from the middle to the weak side, you'll get matters on like a pin down. Like you get stuff
Yeah.
like that naturally, and I kind of wonder, are we a little too static? Is basically my question. Do we get more, even if it's like at what some point you're rotating yourself out of optimal positioning, but like I don't think we're in danger of
No,
that
I think that's a
all
good
the time.
point. I think, like I said, when I first saw it, I thought, okay, this makes sense. This gives Asier more to do as the one guard, but then why not like give Pat that power side with the ball for like 30% of the time maybe, and see what comes from that, and then see what works and what doesn't. Because I think I like he didn't touch the ball a whole lot at the start of the game, and he ends up shooting like hitting 17 points, being 8 for 11
Pretty
from the
good.
field, so really efficient.
Not bad, that Patrick Anderson guy.
So, and Asier being scoring 4 points, 1 for 4, like, and that doesn't mean Asier was not playing a good game because he had 15 assists, but like,
Nuts when you're like, oh, 1 from 4, that was all quiet. It's like, what was he like, 15 and 11 or something? 15 and 13.
yeah.
Just
But getting Pat a couple extra looks might be able to grease the offense a little bit more, maybe. I could
yeah,
definitely
for
see
sure.
that.
In general, I love saying in general to absolve myself. In general, I'm a big fan of like, hey, if you know a team's gonna jump a guy on the halfway line, probably like put the ball in his
Yeah,
hands.
true.
Like, I don't know, we have two or three guys that people are gonna freak out if they have the ball if they have the ball in their hands, but it's like, can we leverage that? And yeah, I think some of the issues we have, obviously, like throughout the season, are a little bit like balance related, and the fact that we've got a lot of sort of perimeter guys and this, that, and the other, and maybe Mercia are very well equipped to make us feel that when we're playing them. Like they go, if you look at their starters, like they didn't start the press lineup. No, they started their four bigs lineup. Like Joaquin Robles is quick, Pablo Zarzuela is quick, Lee Fryer, very quick. Lalo isn't slow. He's not as quick as those three guys, but like he's so strong and he can push people
Yeah.
around and he makes it difficult for you. And like if you're trying to fill blocks with like the likes of Mariano on the block, like he's the only guy that I've seen like who can like push people sideways like from face on. Like you can be foot plate to foot plate with him and he'll move you left or right rather than back. And you're like, how have you done this? And then Lourdes Ortega is like, as I say, not as quick, but like smart. And I think they've got their getting her out of trouble very well worked out. And they've got like getting her out of mismatches pretty well worked at this point. And they're well put together. So, like, maybe they're one of the teams that's like well put together to sort of expose some of the stuff that we haven't quite figured out. But yes, I'm all
This
for diversity in offense, to be fair. Like, I'm
no.
none of that stuff in general, but the this is still a game that we could have pulled out anyway, and we probably wouldn't be having we me and you probably would have still been having these conversations, but if we win this game, we'd figure it out. I think it's easy enough to go, all right, cool, next one. But so we get down the stretch of the game
No,
and
no, 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 no. Wait. We're far from done, James. Or if you need to be short, like quicker, you can tell me. But your point about balance brought me to my second question, which is, you
you
started
have
David
notes. You're looking
Maurice.
off camera here. You have notes.
No, this is just the stats, but I also have notes. I do have notes. They're
Oh, you've
in the
got two
text.
monitors. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not sure if my iPad Zoom really just like works very well if I go to do other stuff on my iPad. So I've got my laptop on. You guys start with Pat Garcia, David Maurice, Chima Avendaño, and Mariana Perez. So mainly ball handlers and Mariana. And then Chima probably playing the dive most often. Who
Yes.
comes in at halftime is Adrian Garcia, Chiqui. He ends up playing 23 minutes for the game, but I don't think he played in the first half, right?
Well, if he comes in second half and he pretty much played most of the overtime, I would guess not. Like I
Yeah.
don't remember the sort of sub patterns and
No. I think he came in this in the start of the third quarter for David Maurice, and he didn't come out. Or yeah, until the very end, maybe.
Yeah, he
And
probably
that
followed on.
changes the way you guys can play quite drastically. Of course, you guys are still without Manu, which makes a really big difference.
Oh yeah, that makes the world of difference. If like we're talking about we lack a little like block presence and balance, like having one of the better big threes in the world being injured is a
Yeah.
tough gig. Like
And Adrian shot well for the game. He was, according to the stats, 5 for 6 for 12 points.
yeah. There was a little run in the third or fourth, I don't remember. We had a couple of points in a row, and I honestly thought he was just going to dig us out of a hole on his own. I was very excited about it. Like,
Yeah.
he had a couple of finishes. There was one where, like, he was kind of cutting through the elbow, and I thought he was going to turn left and set a pick or whatever. And he just took a guy the other way, went to the basket, and made like a little like finger roll layup. And I was like, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
We're gonna get out of here alive. We did not.
And when I was watching this and I mentioned like Cheeky coming in the second half, you said something that was interesting to me, which was
Hold on, hold on, hold on. You're not going to read my WhatsApps out.
no. That's in the tab next to that, but I'm not opening it. I'm just paraphrasing you,
Okay.
which is in general in wheelchair basketball, can you play four out as they do in the
Okay. I thought you were actually just going to read one of my WhatsApps, and I was like, you don't like
NBA?
that's not what this podcast is.
I would have asked permission and you would have said no.
Yes. Also, like for the record, I haven't like flamed anyone in the WhatsApps. Like I was just like, I'm like Mendel. You don't need to play us anymore this year. What do you think about this stuff? But yeah, it's pretty hard to play four out. I know teams have tried it. You can kind of run pick and roll one side. So you play pick and roll on the left. You can have a guy spotted up in the middle and a guy spotted up like elbow and baseline on the weak side. But
Yeah.
it's not very conventional. And like you have to be really sure that you're generating on that strong side pick and roll so that you will absolutely shoot the ball in one of those three other spots, because if you don't, you are back to square one and you haven't broken down this like the screen position on the weak side. Like have you ever had a coach that's wanted to play four out, or have you ever tried it, or
I don't think so. No. Have you, like, do you have a team that comes to mind when you think, like, when you say I've seen teams try it? Because I can't really picture it.
No. I don't have like professional team in a game in mind. Like I've heard
No.
talk about it and like mention it in practices and this, that, and the other. But I just think like my general conception of spacing, like people talk about like five out in the able-bodied game, and that is spacing, but it's because at any point the basket is something that you need to worry about because people can take you off the dribble and go to the basket, or people can cut. So you have the sort of, if you consider sideline to sideline, horizontal and halfway line to baseline, vertical, you have vertical spacing because the threat of needing to care about the basket is there. And I don't think that's the case if you're just five flat on the 3 point. And like if you think of where every team in wheelchair basketball plays their standard defense, that before they get into like maybe we press or maybe this, that, and the other, they want to be five people flat in a line on the 3 point line. So
Yeah.
like I think it also the fact that you can't get to the corners is a big part of this. But
For sure.
I think you need that element of vertical spacing. Like you need someone on the block to create space, because I don't think you're like all the teams that go five out in the NBA, that's not even a thing anymore. They've gone back to like
No.
cutters and this, that, and the other. But like the Houston Rockets is a great example. Second James Harden reference. This podcast, weird, but the whole thing was like, we're not going to set picks. Like we're just going to like you need that depth. You need a picking angle. Like you couldn't. If me and you were parallel on a basketball court, I don't think we're like setting good picks,
No.
which is not the case in able-bodied basketball because people are trying to stay matched up and bodies are smaller and you can like whatever. More movable in more multi-directional as well. Like I think you need that sort of presence to sort of you need that anchor basically, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the thing. And it doesn't need to be a beast, and it doesn't need to be someone who's like gonna necessarily go inside, but it's just like a physical presence in that certain position that a defender has to be basket side of. Like
Yeah. No, I think that's exactly it, and evidenced by the fact that like Adrian came in, and like I don't think it's any disrespect to say Adrian out of like Pat Garcia, Papi is the like the least skilled of those like four players, but the fact that he does a job that needs doing and he's able to play under the basket, which the other guys are less inclined to do, is
Sure.
so valuable for you guys. And
Yeah.
yeah, I thought
I think so.
he
And it's like,
deserves praise.
it's not a job that other people can't do, and it's not another job that a job that people won't do, but it's just like that's a spot that he's lived in for a couple of years. He's great. I'm a big cheeky fan. He's the man. I think we have options. I think we have ways that we can sort of tweak things and figure it out, because you can get creative with like four perimeter guys, three of which will be on the perimeter at any given point, but like you can be a bit more dynamic with it and have like cross picks and like kind of exchanges and an understanding that like someone will have to fill a block that they're not sort of always used to. And I think there are ways to do it. Like I've been on teams with four shooters, I've been on teams with no shooters. Like you can do all that stuff. Like, but yeah, no, I think we're on the way to hopefully figuring it out. But every time a game like this happens, you're like, oh man, are we miles away? Are we ever going to figure it out? And it's never as good as you think it is, and it's never as bad as you think it is, probably either. But
Okay, James. I think it's time to move on. I have more stuff to say, but I'm gonna skip a bunch of it because we've been recording for an hour. I don't know how long you want to keep going. I'm not in a rush, but
yeah, we should do a little bit, like a little bit more. We should keep it to an hour and something that is less than about 20,
okay. Because
max.
there's
But yeah,
more stuff that's interesting in this game.
Give me some more stuff you thought was interesting. I thought none of it was interesting.
Okay. Okay. I have one.
I was dying to pee at like halftime and then didn't because we were talking about stuff at halftime, and then I was like, nah, it's fine. Game's nearly over. Went to
Okay.
overtime. I had to come in. I came on the floor for a four. oh boy.
Okay, so we can do a little quick fire interesting observations about this game. One of them was, according to the stats, Lalo did not hit a three, but I'm pretty sure Lalo hit a three in the third quarter to cut it to like 1 point game or something.
Think I remember feeling like we got away with them counting that as a two.
Okay.
I
Anyway.
think it looked like a three from where I was on the bench at the other side of the floor, but I remember the refs calling it a two and me being like, hey, I didn't see it that well, and I'm certainly not going to be like, whoa, 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 are you sure? So yeah, I don't know.
Fair enough. To be fair, it probably felt to him like it was a three, which is my point. Because there was a game this season, I don't remember which game, but more like he hit a three in the third quarter or in the fourth quarter, and at that point he kept shooting a bunch of them.
Yeah,
And
man. I think that was like a Copa del Rey game where he hit one, and then there was a point where it's like it wasn't the case, but there was an offense that it felt like he like wanted the clock to run down so that he could shoot another one. I'm like, great.
Like I remember thinking when that happened in that other game that like this is not what you guys want right now because you're running good offense, and I'm not saying Lelo can make threes, he obviously can and he does,
Yeah.
but it's not their go-to, and well, for that game it meant it was gonna he was they had some inefficient offense. So
Yeah,
when he
it's
hit
like the
that three in the
opportunity
third,
cost, isn't it? When you have a guy like that on the perimeter, when it's like you're there, we just spoke about anchors on the block, like
yeah.
you're their block guy, you're a beast inside. And also, when you're shooting that, you've got someone who should be maybe on the perimeter or is more comfortable or more effective on the perimeter on a block. And also, you're out there instead of being in there. Like, what have you given up in the hypothetical world where you weren't there? Is yeah. And that's not
Yeah.
always reasonable because maybe it was a shot clock thing or whatever, I don't remember, but and he made it.
Yeah. No. I don't think the shot he took was a bad shot, but at that point I was like, okay, like maybe him hitting this is good news for Bilbao because he's gonna be like, oh, let me stay away from the dive because I'm feeling this. And he like you said, they need him on the dive. So I thought that was interesting. Then one thing that was interesting that I saw Asier do, and I've seen him do this before, which is I called it anti-spacing in my notes, where like he gets jumped in a pick and roll, and instead of like trying to use the space like the one defender that tries to play the two offensive players, like break your chair, like use the space to threaten the shot and then let the defender choose. Instead of that, he like waltzes into the defender, makes the defender choose him, and then drop a pass to Chema Avendaño under the basket and
He's
got
so
a great
brilliant.
look from it.
We
It was,
spoke
and
about
it's
this. There are
like,
very few guys that can get away with that. I think it's because he's like a four and he's a big ball handler. And like, he's like, because he's really good at the little short post ups that he dribbles into. So I think he's like, hey, if they actually make the choice and I get in trouble here, I can probably just post this up. Like,
yeah.
he does that like coming down the middle of the floor very well, where he'll get to like a foot above the charge circle. And if he gets stopped, he'll just be able to post up. And he's got the little up and under finger roll that always goes in. And I still don't understand the physics of it. I've asked him to be like, hey, teach me how to do that. And he's like, don't worry about it. But the way I described it to you is like people talk about like if you come off a pick and so you're two for one, you and the guy rolling until help comes, make the defender in the middle choose like
Yeah.
space so that they have to choose one or the other. And I described it as you as him choosing for them. Him being like, hey, you're gonna stop me, aren't you? He's just like, I think you want to give yourself as much space as possible so that the defender chooses, but also that you have space to get your shot off or to make a good pass or this, that, and the other. But he doesn't need that much space for either, is the thing. Where he's like, I will post Lala or whoever it was, Lala or Pablo, or
It was
he's like,
Lalo.
I will post Lala up, or I will be able to throw it over to them, and I will be able to pick which fingertip Chema catches it with. Like, he's just such a like pick and roll operator. Like he's, yeah, but that is so interesting. The idea of like, we'll just both go to the basket. Someone will choose. Like you see that in some of our off ball stuff where like, if you were like two guys in transition, like two on one, you'd maybe have most teams that have one guy going inside and another guy spacing. But some teams are like, nah, go to the basket. We're just all going to go. You can't stop us all. But yeah, no, he's so great at that because he's got such good like ball in one hand on the other wheel, like little chair stops. So yeah, but like who else does that? Like I think Phil does it, and Phil's very good at it too, with like just all chair control. Like, and it's like a hey, I'm draw, like you, it's this the, both the guys, and it's like, hey, I'm drawing this defender, like, but they're both massive is the thing. I say he's not massive for a four, but he is a four. Like Phil's massive for a three and can do that sort of stuff. But I think it's just the way Phil's shooting like mismatch post-ups these days, like 105%, or whatever his shooting percentage is on, it's completely insane. Like he's just not missed one of those, it feels like. It's like it's a thing of like, if I get into trouble, I can get myself back out rather than not getting yourself in trouble, isn't it? But
That's a good way to put it as well. The fact that they have like multiple ways to get out of that situation if they end up like not finding anything immediately, that makes a big difference too. Because like, I don't know, Tommy Boehm is one of the more skilled ball handlers that I've played with for sure. But like he doesn't want to bury himself right there.
no.
While like Asier and Phil can get away with burying themselves a little bit because they can get out of it or take a post up or
Two guys who are both very good at dribbling backwards as well, which is like a weird skill. Like it's not top of the list of skills, but like getting yourself back out of a hole in that scenario is interesting. But yeah, any other little bits?
The next bit in my notes is what's up with the free throws, but we're not there yet. So
God damn it, we are. Are we not there?
no, because we how did we get to overtime, James?
So we get to overtime because we being Bilbao throw a pass to a guy that is not wearing black. So we managed to, I think we're up three,
Yes.
force a miss, good defense, and I'm like, all right, cool. Like as I say, I'm about to pee myself at this point, and I'm like, oh, thank God, cool. We've done it, guys. Good job, everyone. Like I wasn't turning around and high-fiving people on the bench. At this point, we probably had like 32 points sitting on the bench filed out. I don't remember. No, I think it was only Pat and Asier in
Sure,
regular.
we're still on.
Oh yeah, and it was only Pat in regulation, I believe, which is hard to believe. But we, yeah. So I think it's Chema throws a pass to Julio, who Lee throws himself in front of it, which is unbelievable. Like just the putting your body on the line, being able to get there, and also wanting to throw yourself there is nuts. I respect it. Big make because he's Like, do you know when you see like all the like Pat does it and he does it and there's like videos of them like tilting and staying on one wheel forever? Like, that's the only practical application of like not falling as quickly as I've ever seen that isn't like hitting post-ups on the tilt. But like, I literally think he was able to like stop himself falling forward for half a second before he did it, which is just like insane. He's not actually stopping himself, he's just managing to control his fall, but making that is absolutely wild. And Julio, I think, is just unfairly sort of caught in that. Like, I don't know what you can do. I think what we can do is maybe like cross a little bit more effectively and make it a little easier to throw passes to guys. Because it's not the first time we've had similar end game turnovers. But yeah, unbelievable steal, unbelievable finish. Completely ridiculous. Makes the free throw, makes the layup, which is nuts, makes the free throw. And yeah, we get a decent shot off and
Yeah, you got Chema gets a very good look for the winner, but doesn't get it to go.
yeah, I'd have loved that, obviously, because we'd have won, but like I'd have just loved that because like Chema, after all this, all the mad, like the I know the ref stuff gets madder, but like Chema making that shot, I'm like, let's go.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that would have been great, but wasn't to be. We go to overtime and then I don't know if I have any real information about what happened with the referees because I have no idea. So I know Asier just gets like a normal fifth foul, right?
Yeah,
Like,
yeah.
for just like a backing on. I don't remember what his fifth was actually. Asier gets a foul, gets thrown out. So we are under points at this point, I believe. Spat's already off the floor. And then there's some weird referee stuff. I don't even know what happened. David, I think, gets double tech, like straight out. Chema manages to get two techs in there somewhere. Actually, I got a technical for saying something to our coach that the refs overheard, which I don't think should be a thing.
Don't know, it depends. You can't just be like, hey, this ref is a little, and then whatever
Yeah.
expletives you want to say, and then be like, no, I wasn't talking to you, don't listen. Like,
Yeah, I'd be like, hey, who's this? You're like, well, yeah, like I heard that. Like, you can't just call me. Like, you can't just drop a C bomb within my sort of radius and not expect me to. Yeah, I don't think what he said was
okay.
like maybe, like I don't think he agreed with the call or whatever, but I don't think he was like,
Okay.
I don't think it was that egregious. Also, I'm just like, hey, refs, like take a little bit more. I'm not like, oh, the refs cost us this game. We cost us this game. I also didn't recognize two of the refs when they showed up. I was like, who are these guys? Like, what are we doing here? Which is not ideal, but I also don't think the refs that I recognize would have filled me with confidence. So, and also, like, as I say, we turned the ball over three up with 3 seconds to go and gave up an ant one. Like, refs didn't do that. So they all get thrown out. At this point, I'm on the bench. Like, just exasperated and very much needing a pee, as I've repeated. This is real, real. The context, this is not context. Like, I'm not going to tell you that I peed myself or anything at the end of this. That didn't happen. But I'm on the floor to go to like 12 points because Papi, Gemma, Asier, David are all off the floor at this point.
Wow.
Feel like I came in and immediately like inbounded off a press break to someone wearing red. Like, I think I started the a million free throws thing. I think it was my turnover,
Okay.
which is awful because I have no idea what, like, I just threw a pass short because I was cold or I'm bad or whatever. I throw it to Cheeky, who's over the halfway line. Robles nips in front of it, gets a piece. And I don't know if they called it unsportsmanlike or whether it was bonus or both. And then there were techs. And I think we got up to, in my mind, it was seven free throws, but I think it's five, right? Like,
Rose said it was five. I didn't take the time to go through the thing. I just skipped it. But yeah, I
yeah.
believe it's five.
At that point, I am on the halfway line with Beatriz Udaire being like, hey, how's it going? Good to see you. This game's weird, right? Like, do you know what's happening? Do you know how many free throws are left? But there were like, if you watch the video, there's twice where someone shoots a free throw and then I go to join the like free throw lineup and the refs are like, no, not yet. And I'm like, I'm sure one of these sets of free throws is a normal foul that I'm allowed to rebound from. We lost in overtime by about eight anyway. Like, I don't, like, it didn't matter, but
Yeah.
I don't know what went on. Like, I think there might have been three tacks. Like, it might have been like a normal foul and three technicals. Like, it might
Okay.
have been that because I know David gets,
Yeah.
so that's two technical fouls. And I know Chema is out by the end of the game as well, and he had a technical at some point. So there's three free throws. And then if it's a normal foul or an unsportsmanlike, there's two.
Yeah.
So that might be it. But I didn't hear what, like, I don't know what led to people talking. I don't know what specific calls led to talking to refs, which led to whatever was said to get thrown out. I don't have any good juicy details about that stuff,
Fair
but
enough. That is disappointing, but I'll take it.
that was, and that was not even like I would tell you, but like I was on our right elbow while I think David was on, like, I think we were half a court away when he said whatever or did whatever. I have no idea. And
The
it is.
play-by-play doesn't help me either.
What's that?
The play-by-play and the stats doesn't help
No,
me.
play by play. Imagine if a play by play had details of what was said to the refs. It's like James McSorley, technical foul, said the refs' parents can go. like, that'd be so great, the details involved. But yeah, I no real details. They're up a good amount at that point. I would argue if you're trying to close a game out and you give someone the chance to score 5 points while the clock isn't running, you're probably going to lose in overtime.
Yeah.
So yeah, we also ended up with like guys that don't play, like me, Ashkad and Alex on the floor. I think we were 4-3-5-2-2-1 at that, without junior point reductions. So that was, I think the game's over at that point. But that was chaotic, and I don't really get what happened. To summarize, not a clue.
Okay. Sorry, Rose.
Sorry, Rose. But yeah, people got thrown out. I think three of the free throws were technicals, and two of them were a normal foul, is probably my guess.
Yep, sounds
Because
about
I think
right.
it's immediately after I throw a turnover to someone who fouls trying to catch my pass, which is just hilarious. Throwing someone into an unsportsmanlike is rough. Because I think they got the ball back, so it must have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love when refs have like unsportsmanlike and technical and stuff, and you see them all talk about me like, what's the order of this? Like the way there's like a thing to remember what order you do mathematical equations in. They're like, okay, so technicals before unsportsmanlike, but they probably have like a little rhyme, but also they might just know the rules. Oh, Mandel, this was a nightmare. I can't believe I had to relive it. I watched most of it live, like a.
Well, thanks for sitting through it with me. I must
Sucks
say,
to suck.
it does suck to suck. This is a fact. I have to say the new format I think is great. I feel way less stressed coming on the podcast trying to say stuff about games I've hardly seen, and then also talk about games I didn't see at all. And
It's fun to
this
lie, isn't it?
is
Yeah.
no.
No, we just like wanted to put our energy towards caring about the games that were fun to watch. Because I don't know if anyone wants to hear us be like, on this game, 84-21. Like, nah, it's not what we're here
AI
for.
can do that.
Yes. Yes. All right. We're gonna call it there. Oh, I had a. I'm gonna call this podcast something to do with breaking down or breakdowns or having a breakdown or decided. So yeah.
Breaking down breakdowns.
Yes, breaking it down. But yeah. All right. Thanks for listening. This was weird. I'm sad and tired now. And yeah, we being me and Mark, probably not me and Mendel, will talk to you next week. If you like this better than when Mark's here, keep it to yourself. And thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.